sole survivor. Now, I've got to tell you, I believe that sometime in my history with you, I had another sermon called Sole Survivor. But I want to promise you that it was not this sermon. This sermon was recently written, and I'm not even sure what that one was based on. I didn't even take the time to go look it up. But I believe what Jeremiah is talking about today is about how to survive, not just physically, but spiritually, to survive tough times. It's Memorial Day weekend. I want to have you think about, because some of us I know have heard of the Battle of the Bulge. But I'm just going to give you a few facts about the Battle of the Bulge. Remember, if you don't know, it was a battle between Germany and the Allied forces, America, Great Britain, probably Australia, I can't remember. But it started on about December 16th, 1944, went all the way into January of the next year. It was meant, actually, not something that we initiated. The Germans initiated that, trying to break up the Allied forces and make a turn in the war that they were beginning to lose at the time. So gathered up there on December 16th, they mounted a surprise attack on the Allied forces. At the time that attack took place, here's what I'm going to tell you. The United States had 228,000 soldiers on that line, attacked by surprise. Germans had almost double, 406,000 were in that attack on the German side of the line. The Allied forces had 483 tanks. The Germans had 557. The United States had 500 what they called tank destroyers. The Germans had 667. I'm just going to stop right there and tell you that's what happened on December 16th, the day that Germany started that surprise attack. Just about a little over a week later, the United States had 541,000 soldiers on that front line. Germany had 449,000. The United States had moved from 483 tanks, the Allied forces moved from 483 tanks to 1,616 tanks. And here's critical. Remember I told you Germany had 557 tanks. By this date, it was actually Christmas Eve, their tanks had dropped to 423. By about a week later, January 2nd, there's 705,000 Allied soldiers and only 401,000 German soldiers. The Allied forces had 2,409 tanks, and Germany had only 287 tanks. A week after that, 700,000 Allied forces, 383,000 German, 2,428 tanks for the Allied side, 216 tanks for Germany. It ends on January 26th, and at the end of it, 81,000 Americans had died. 1,408 British had died. Germany said that about 75,000 Germans died. The United States estimated that at about 104,000. It's known as basically the final turning point of the war in Europe, of the war itself, actually. But what people don't know from all the statistics I just told you is how bad it was. If you've ever watched Band of Brothers, you'll get a picture. That's probably the best portrayal of what it was like. But what I like to do is I like to listen to that Greatest Generation, and there's not many of them left, in interviews that they gave, people that were actually there. And I was watching a few of those things this weekend, and there was a gentleman on there who was actually there. He said, Allied forces, a lot of them didn't even have coats. They didn't have the right stuff they needed. One night it was 18 degrees below zero. It got so cold that their weapons locked up. Their weapons froze shut. I was watching this one group, and they were towards the back. they had found a town that had been bombed out, so they would go back at night into this house and go into the basement to sleep. They're down in there one night, and they get up in the morning, and a German officer walks in, never pulls his sidearm out, and goes into where they're sleeping and says to them, "Do you want to surrender?" And the point, they did. The point was simply they were out of food. It was freezing cold. It was bad. And you and I ought to be so very incredibly thankful for the gift they've given to us. We probably wouldn't be sitting here today if it weren't for that having happened. But for all of those that were killed and all of those that sacrificed, there were those who came back and they were survivors. And many of them came back missing toes, fingers, hands, legs, not from explosions, from frostbite. And certainly enough of them came home damaged by the war. And certainly a lot of them, obviously from what I told you, did not come home. Let's take this passage a verse at a time, because I want to talk to you today about how to be a soul survivor when times get rough. Jeremiah says, "This I call to mind, and therefore I have hope." Do you have hope? Jeremiah's not minimizing what's going on in his life. And you may say, well, what's going on in his life? It's actually not just Jeremiah's life. It's Israel's life. They have been run down. They've been destroyed by the Babylonians. And he says, but this I call to mind. And you say, but Joel, give me a picture of what this is. What has happened to bring him here? All you need to do is read the first 20 verses prior to this. They go like this. And listen close to these things. So it'll give you a picture of the mindset of all of Israel. I'm the man who's seen affliction under the rod of God's wrath. He's driven me into the darkness without any light. Surely against me he's turned his hand all the day long. He's made my flesh and my skin waste away. He has broken my bones. He's besieged me with bitterness and tribulation. He's made me dwell in darkness like the dead of long ago. He's blocked my way with stones. He's made my path crooked. He's been like a bear lying in wait for me, like a lion that's hiding out. I've become the laughing stock of all the people, the object of their taunts all the day long. He's filled me with bitterness. He's made me cower in my ashes. I have no peace. I've forgotten what happiness looks like. I can't endure any longer. My soul remembers this and is bowed down within me. And yet, look at that verse. Here's where he turns the corner. But, it's an awful big but, isn't it, after everything he's just said. But, this I will call to mind. And therefore, I have hope. What's he going to call to mind right here? After everything he just said, what's going to bring him that hope that he's talking about? Because he says, I'll call this to mind. I'm going to tell you in a minute what he's calling to mind, but he says, but I have hope. I want to stop for a minute and have you to think about your Old Testament, the story of the Hebrew children in bondage in Egypt. And you've got to put it in the context of the covenant with Abraham. Abraham, get up and leave. I'll take you to a land that you've never seen before. Your children will be like the sand of the sea and the night stars. I'll give you a land that flows with milk and honey. And here are Abraham's descendants in Egypt living as slaves, right? And when you get to Exodus chapter 2, the 23rd to the 25th verse, this is what it says. Just listen to this. During those days the king of Egypt died, the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery. They cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, with Jacob, and God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. I just want you to stop right there. And God knew. What the writer Moses of the book of Exodus is trying to tell us is, you will never be in a situation that God's not aware of. Yes, they were in bondage. Yes, they were in slavery. They put themselves there, but God knew that. And God knew every hair on their head and every circumstance of their life. And as Jeremiah is writing here in Lamentations 3, the 21st verse, after everything he said in those first 20 verses on behalf of Israel, he is going to say this, "But I can't forget. I'll call it to mind constantly, and this will bring me hope." He's really saying the same thing that the writer of Exodus said there in Exodus 3. Yeah, they're in bondage. Yes, they're in slavery. Yes, it looks tough, but God knows that. And the writer here, Jeremiah, is saying, as bad as it is right now, Jerusalem's walls have been torn down. The city is left open to attack. We are all been deported away, and it's as bad as it can get, but I still have hope, and here's why. Look at what he says in that 22nd verse. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. The steadfast love of the Lord, it will never stop. God is as loyal to his people as he can be, more than we are loyal to each other. And his covenant that he made with Abraham all those centuries ago, he hasn't forgotten that. And he will continue to extend his love and his mercy to his people. Have you ever thought about this? God's natural inclination, if you've read the Bible before, is always to extend grace. And you can say, well, Joel, the Hebrew children were in bondage and slavery. Yeah, they put themselves there. They did it to themselves with sin. And right now, Babylon's destroyed the country, tore down the walls of the city. How'd that happen? They did it to themselves. It was their sin. God's compassion always is present, even in the midst of the worst situation that you could ever imagine. Look at Deuteronomy, God speaks. And I'm not going to read this long passage to you, but basically what God says, Deuteronomy 30, the 11th verses, Moses writes and says, God says when the worst of the worst happens to you, when the best that you could have had could have been yours, but you have sinned and you find yourself the subject, the prisoner of those around you that you never wanted to be subject to. Remember, you did it to yourself. This is, go read it sometime for yourself. But what I really want you to hear is this. The Lord will again take delight in prospering you, just as he took delight in your fathers. When you obey the voice of the Lord to keep his commandments, when you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, he will hear you. So what does Jeremiah remember? He says, I'll call to mind in the midst of how as bad as it can be, I will call this to mind and I'll have hope in it. And what does he have hope in? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. I read a commentary this week. It's the Word Biblical Commentary, but there was a line in that commentary that I wanted to put on the screen. And you should know that I'm missing three or four words. I'm going to give them to you. They're not on the screen. I didn't put them there. But the commentator just said this, God's determination to bless and heal is as thorough and unusual as his determination to punish sin. And the words that I left out were these, but even more so. Yeah, God can't stand in the face of sin. God won't fill a dirty cup, and he'll do what he has to do. And you and I may pay the price for that sin, but he'll never forget us. And his desire for us to be his people and him to be our God and for his grace and compassion and love to be extended to us is always greater than the circumstances we find ourselves in because of our own sin. And so Jeremiah says, but this I'll call to mind, and this is what brings me hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies have no end. And then he says this, they are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness, O God. Can I point something out to you? We were sitting down last night enjoying the evening, and we were having a little bit of a chat about, you know, future things, I guess is what you'd say, where we've been and where we're headed to. And you know that the last 4 months have been a little bit of a challenge, particularly January, February, and March were a struggle for me. And out of the clear blue, she says to me, "What happens if in the next year you die?" That's funny. You can laugh. I laughed. I said, "What?" I said, "Do you know something I don't know? Because I'm doing my best to get better right now. Did you see something at the hospital in my lab work that I haven't seen?" She said, "No." She said, "I'm just saying, what about the worst of the worst possibilities?" And I said, "I can't worry about that, and neither can you. You know why? Because the fact that I got up today and took in a breath is a perfect illustration of God's grace extended to me. And it is for you too. Look at what it says. His mercies are new every morning. He is faithful every morning." When you woke up today and God's grace was on you to take that first breath, can I tell you something? It's nothing new. He did that yesterday. And the day before that, and the day before that. And what Jeremiah wants those people who are in bondage now and have lost the city and have lost their relationship with God, not because God's mean, but because of their sin, he wants them to know in spite of that, it will be the same tomorrow and the next day after that. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They were there yesterday morning, they were there this morning, and they'll be there tomorrow morning and the morning next week. God will never fail. He's faithful. Then listen to this. Jeremiah says, "The Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will hope in him." You've all seen the bumper sticker that says, "The one that dies with the most toys wins," right? Jeremiah didn't have that on his car. He is saying right here, God's enough. God is enough. The Lord is my portion. He holds my future just as he held my yesterday. Jeremiah says, yes, we're in a sticky wicket here. It's problematic. We've sinned and we've left God out of the picture to the point where it looks like we're not going to have any hope. But Jeremiah says, no, we do have hope. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. It never comes to an end. His mercies are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. God's enough. He's my portion and he's my cup. I'm going to stop and tell you something before we get there. And I messed up. I'll fix it right here. I know how to fix it. The next three verses. Remember I told you we're only reading seven verses today. The first one didn't matter. But the next three do. And the next three verses all start with the word good. I'm going to put them all up there at once and then we'll take them a piece at a time so you get it. The 25th verse says this, "The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him." And then the 26th verse, you notice the word good in that. The 26th verse, and of course I can't find it, says this, "It is good that one should wait quietly for the Lord." And then the 27th, "It is good that for a man or a woman that they bear the yoke in their youth." Now let me get back to that 25th verse. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. Can I tell you that no matter how bad the situation may be for us, maybe right now it's really bad for you, I don't know. And you've got to know that you may look at somebody and say, man, they're doing pretty well. And it's been my experience that you don't really know. We do such a good job of covering up. But what I want you to see is this. When it is as bad as you think it is, that is not necessarily a bad thing. Look again at this verse. The Lord is good to those who will wait for him, to the soul that seeks him. They have lost it all. Israel's lost everything. There is no protection left. The city wall is torn down. And everybody's throwing their hands up saying, we don't know what we're going to do. And maybe in your own life, you found yourself in that place where you're throwing your hands up and say, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't think straight. I can't see straight. I don't know what I'm going to do. The writer of Lamentations, Jeremiah, is telling us right here that wading through that is not a bad thing. Because what do you wait on? Well, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. What do you wait on? You're waiting. Because you know that God has been there in the past. He's been there today, even as bad as it is, and he will carry you through to the tomorrow. So that is why Jeremiah can say, God's good. Even as bad as it is, God is still good. The second good, it's good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Do you ever try to be quiet these days? We do not do quiet well. We are so accustomed to something playing. We took our grandson away on Saturday, yesterday, day before, I don't know. We took him away, and we do this every year. We get him to Cedar Point. Well, we didn't go camping this time. We just drove up and drove back. But Easton, when he was little, we could get out, focus on the family, Adventures in Odyssey, right? You ever hear him? Yeah. We might get out Veggie Tales. Those drive me bananas. But he would listen to that stuff. Well, he's getting older. I mean, it was so sad. When he wanted to ride the cars at Cedar Point, the little ones, you know, go around, around, around. Papa, can I go run their car? Yeah, you can go ride the cars. He ran over there, and they got the little bar out for him, and it's always been like roller coasters. He wasn't tall enough. They got the bar out, and he's too tall now for the little kids' cars. It's not that he's not too tall or too short. He's too tall for them. But we'd listen to, you know, kids' stuff. That was okay for me. Occasionally, I would pull out some of my stuff, my music, and he enjoyed that. And let me say, before going further, we all have tastes, right? My 8-year-old grandson was introduced recently. It was when Mark Thews was still here. He was introduced by a friend of Mark's to sacred organ music. And I love sacred organ music. Honestly, I do. He says, well, Papa, he says, let's not listen to Adventures in Odyssey. He said, I have a CD for you to listen to. And I said, what is that? He said, it's organ music. I said, it's what? I got a 2.5-hour drive, you know, to Sandusky, Ohio. He gives it to me, and I listened to one hymn, and I was ready to quit because it was just so strange to me. I said, Easton, buddy, we can't do this all the way to Sandusky. And I popped it out and handed it back to him. He said, I'll try this one. It was harpsichord music. I listened to one of them. I said, Easton, I can't do this all the way up there. He said, what are we going to do? We'll listen to some Christian comedy. You'll like that. And that settled him. We're all different, right? Wait quietly. In the midst of the storm, that silence, if you love organ music, it's like rock and roll. If you love rock and roll, it's like organ music. If you like classical, it sounds like heavy metal. If you like heavy metal, it sounds like something from when Bach was living. Silence. And writer of Lamentations says, it's good to wait quietly for the Lord. Because sometimes, in the midst of the mess, that's the best music God has to play for us. To sit quietly, it's good to sit quietly and to think. Israel, why don't you sit down and think quietly about how you got here? The writer of Lamentations, and here's that big long section I told you we were going to read. Stay with me. I'm still going to get you out of here early today. Be glad that first song didn't work. He here's what it looked like for Israel. When Jeremiah is saying it's good to wait for God and it may be good to wait quietly for God, here's what it looked like. This is from the chapter before Lamentations 3. The Lord in his anger has set the daughter of Zion under a cloud. He's cast down from heaven to earth the splendor of Israel. He's not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. The Lord has swallowed up without mercy the habitations of Jacob. In his wrath, he broke down the strongholds of the daughter of Judah. He's brought down to the ground to dishonor the kingdoms and its rulers. He's cut down in fierce anger the might of Israel. He's withdrawn from them, his right hand in the face of the enemy. He's burned like a flaming fire in Jacob, consuming all the ground. He's bent his bow like an enemy with his right hand. He's set like a foe, and he has killed all who were delightful in our eyes in the tent of the daughter of Zion. He's poured out his fury like fire. The Lord has actually become an enemy, it seems. He swallowed up Israel. He swallowed up its palaces. He's laid in ruins its strongholds, and he's multiplied the daughter of Judah in the morning of Lamentations. He laid waste his booth like a garden. The Lord has scorned his altar, disowned his sanctuary. The Lord determined to lay in ruins the will of the daughter of Zion. Her gates have sunk into the ground. He's ruined and broken her bars. Her king and princes are among the nations. The law no longer exists. Her prophets find no vision from the Lord. And here's the verse I was driving to. Before I read it, you can read it, but please don't listen. Did you hear in Jeremiah's voice, it can't get any worse than this? Jeremiah was asking this question on behalf of Israel. Why is God doing this to me? And the answer, if you'd sit back quietly and listen, nation of Israel, is you wouldn't listen to God before, so now maybe in the ruins and in the heartache and in the sorrow and in the trial, it'd do you some good to turn off all that music and listen for God. I mean, that's the backdrop right here, church. And I want you to look at the 10th verse. After everything I just read to you in those 9 verses, Lamentations 2, 1 to 9, look at the 10th verse. The elders of the daughter of Zion sit on the ground in silence. They've thrown dust on their heads. They've put on sackcloth. The young women of Jerusalem have bowed their heads to the ground. Let me just stop and let you understand. The leaders of Israel are sitting on the ground with dust on their heads as if in mourning, with grieving clothes, sackcloth upon their bodies. And what are they doing right there? They're sitting on the ground in silence. Don't miss that point. Because you know what happens when hard times come our way? I'm not going to speak for you. Most of you know me well enough to know that this is true. If there is a drop of rain today, I will believe a hurricane's coming. That's my nature. If there is a little bit of a gust of wind today, I'll look for the tornado on the horizon. Are you with me? Most of us, when we go through hard times and they get so very difficult, it can be very easily to be defeated. These men, the leaders of Israel, they are sitting on the ground in grief. They've thrown dust on their head to mourn, and they've put their mourning clothes on, sackcloth. But I want you to know something. They are not Joel Adkins. They are not grieving that they're defeated. It's good that a person would wait quietly on the Lord. Did you catch that they're sitting there in silence and they're just waiting because they know what Jeremiah's told us? The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. God is faithful. And yes, I've put myself in this mess. Israel, we've sinned, we've not listened to God, and everything's fallen to pieces. But God was there before. And he was speaking to us when we were doing it. And now that we're in this mess, he's right here. It's good that we might just sit down and wait to see what he's going to do next. And so they sat down to see, what will God do next? I want to put the verse back up there so you see it. When things get as bad as they can get, sometimes it's okay, sometimes it's good to sit down and to wait for God to speak in the silence. Again, I've got a commentary note for you here. Do I want to put it up there? Yeah, we'll put it up. That verse, this text, takes people who appear to be defeated, and in the context of God in their midst, makes them ultimately victors. But it's good to wait for God in the midst of the mess. We had a kid, a young man, I should say, when I was at the Bolivar Church. He was in the Boy Scout troop. The Bolivar Church for Boy Scouts turned out a ton of Eagle Scouts. They were a really disciplined group of young men. And one of those kids, I believe he got cancer, but he died and in high school. And the church, or the Boy Scout troop actually, put out a flagpole for him, and they put a stone down at the bottom. And on that stone, they put an expression that this young man used to say all the time when you saw him. And it was really this simple. He would look at you and say, "It's all good." Underneath the flagpole at Bolivar Church, if you look on the ground, there's a little memorial, and it says, "It's all good." It has his name behind it, the date that he lived and died and those things. You know what Jeremiah is saying to us? As bad as it can get, if you have God, it's going to be okay. But sometimes you may have to wait on him. And finally, the 27th verse. It's good for a man or a woman that they bear the yoke in their youth. The yoke is the hard times. And it appears that what Jeremiah is saying is that we ought to pray that the worst of the worst happens when we're young, right? That's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that when the hard times come, and they will come. And you know as well as I do that when Jesus said it rains on the just and the unjust alike, bad things happen to good people as well as to bad people. I hate to put it that way, very judgmental, but you know that's the truth. And they can happen at any time in life, right? Trials can come. That job can come along and disappear as quickly as it came along. That illness that you weren't expecting can show up out of the blue, literally. The thing that you weren't looking for and weren't hoping to happen, somebody in your circle of love may not be here tomorrow. That happens. But it's not important that it happens when you're young. What Jeremiah is actually saying right here is it's important that as we go through the tornadoes and the trials and the fires and the ups and the downs of life, that we learn something from it. And Jeremiah is saying, what I've learned is, when it's good, God is good. When it's not so good, God is good. And when it looks hopeless, God's still good. And if I'll sit here and quietly wait for him, he'll be good tomorrow too. But I gotta wait. The writer of Hebrews would say it this way, and I'm finishing up. In the book of Hebrews chapter 12, it's for discipline that you have had to endure. God is treating you like his child. What child is there that the father does not discipline. If you're left without discipline, which we've all had to have, then you're illegitimate children. Besides this, we've had earthly fathers that disciplined us. We respected them. Should we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? They discipline us for a short time as it seemed best to them. But he disciplines us, and here's that word, for our good, that we may share in his holiness. In the moment, all discipline looks like it's painful, not pleasant. But later, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those that have been trained by it. When Jeremiah says it's good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth, he's saying to us, when you go through the hard times, learn about God in them. Because there's going to be more hard times. And if you learn here that God was there before it happened, whatever it is, when it happened, whatever it was, and after it happened, whatever it was, you can know that whatever tomorrow brings, God's not changed, because he is the same yesterday, today, and forever. There's another hymn, "Thou changest not, thy compassions they fail not. Great is thy faithfulness, O God." So let's bring this and boil it down to the bottom line. I'm going to trick you out today. I've got three bottom lines. The first two are just for my amusement. Your school of hard knocks may be God's university of life. That's for fun. 1,000 little deaths can lead to one great life. But here's the real bottom line. And it comes from Paul in the book of Romans. And it's a passage of scripture. I consider that the suffering of this present time is not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us. Did you look at that? I consider that the trials of this time can't compare to the glory that will be revealed in us. When you get, and the last few times I've preached, I've taken you to the book of Revelation. I've got two passages here, one from Revelation 21, one from Revelation 7. I think I'm just going to share with you the one from Revelation 21. But at the end of all time, this very familiar verse is spoken. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death will be no more. Neither will there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. For the former things have passed away. And that will be the last verse I give you. But what I want you to see, church, is this. It ain't over till it's over. It ain't over till it's over. Remember the person that Jesus talked about? The man who his fields prospered, his life prospered, and he had so much stuff he didn't know what to do with it. So he built more barns. Because he said, man, I am blessed. So he built a bigger barn for the airplane and the Cadillac and the boat. And he shoved them all in there. And just when he got the door closed, God speaks and says, what are you going to do now? Because tomorrow you're not going to be here. We waste so much of our time thinking that it's all about what's here. You want to be a soul survivor? I don't mean the one that dies with the most toys. You want to be a soul survivor? Learn from the hard times and know that the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. Great is his faithfulness to us. You all might think this is silly, but I'm going to tell you anyhow. January I had that heart cath done. They put a stent inside of me. I walked away from that. It's amazing the confidence you can have. I felt so good. And I thought, man, this is so good. That was January 18th. February 18th was a Sunday, and I got up on that Sunday morning and standing at home looking in the mirror. My chest felt like somebody had put a Mack truck on top of it. I came down here and preached. I take that back. I don't think I did. I think Diana may have covered for me that day, but I was here. And when church let out, I got in the car and went over to the hospital. They said, man, you got pulmonary emboli. They've locked up in three of your main pulmonary subdivisions of your heart. You're in trouble. I immediately was not confident any longer. I called Janice up and cried like a little baby because I thought that was it. And it could have been. Do you know what I can say here on May 26th or whatever the date is exactly today? I can say to you this, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. God is faithful to us. And if it would have been my last day, church, can I tell you something? That'd probably been better anyway. Let's sing together. He never lets go.